Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
The scientific evidence is stronger than ever. Better and more observations. Improved understanding of the climate system response. Further development of climate models. All point in the same direction. Human influence on the climate system is clear.
That's the intro to a video produced in 2013 from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Now, this group compiles the science and reports every year on the state of the science when it comes to not only climate change as a subject, which is an interesting subject, the climate does appear to change in certain ways, but human influence on it is still a consensus that human influence is bringing about radical changes in the climate of our planet. Now, what part of that statement is true and what part of that statement is perhaps an exaggeration? It's our series, the series we're doing on social progressives. Are they anti-science on various subjects? Today, the subject of climate change. Joining us to talk about whether or not social progressives are anti-science on climate change, Dr. Cal Beisner, founder and national spokesman of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Dr. Beisner, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Well, thanks very much. It's great to be back with you.
This organization that we hear from quite often, in fact, once a year, an official report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Has this group been entirely honest in the past in the way that it's reported the science on climate change?
Well, I think the most simple answer is no, not entirely. And that's not to say that it's been entirely dishonest either. But one of the most obvious illustrations of the fact that there are some dishonesties involved is that when it released its fourth assessment report, which came out in 2007, it claimed that all of the scientific sources for information in that report were from refereed, that is, peer-reviewed literature. As a matter of fact, it turned out that a high percentage, something in the neighborhood of 40%, if my memory serves me right, were actually not from refereed literature at all, and a fairly high percentage of those that were not actually were instead advocacy pieces from environmental organizations around the world, like Greenpeace or International Union for the Conservation of Nature or Sierra Club, organizations that obviously had an axe to grind and that had not had these pieces of literature peer-reviewed. So that would be one of the simplest illustrations of some dishonesty there. They cleaned up their act fairly well for their next, the fifth assessment report, which came out in 2013. But even there, there was a really interesting thing that appeared even in the what's called the summary for policymakers. That summary for policymakers claims that we now have overwhelming evidence that the primary cause of global warming over the last 60 years or so was human activity. They said that they were extremely likely to be sure on that. Well, the interesting thing is that in the same report, they changed their range of estimate of the amount of warming that could be expected from a doubling of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from their prior range of 2 to 4.5 degrees to a new range of 1.5 to 4.5 degrees. Well, what that means is that their uncertainties actually increased from the fourth assessment report to the fifth assessment report, and yet the certainty with which they made the claim increased as well. Now, if your uncertainties, if your range of estimate broadens, you cannot say that your certainty has increased. It has to have done the opposite. So there are all kinds of problems. I mean, one of the problems simply is this, that most people think that if you've got a summary for policymakers, that's going to summarize something that was settled before the summary was written. But that's not the way the UN IPCC works. Instead, they prepare the draft of the major assessment report. And then that draft goes to a committee that is largely government bureaucrat appointees, not actual scientists, and they prepare a summary for policymakers. Then they go back and they make changes in the actual technical reports to make sure that they agree with the summary, which is kind of putting things exactly backward of how they should work. So there are some fundamental dishonesties going on, and those are just a few examples.
One of these things, which may not be, in fact, any kind of intentional dishonesty, but in fact, just a kind of a carryover from when the predictions were far more dire, and that is, you mm-hmm. say the computer models that are being used that have predicted warming are really kind of outperforming the actual planet. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's so. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change depends hugely on computer models to estimate future temperature, and those estimates are in turn based on computer models of future emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases, which are in turn based on computer models estimating future use of fossil fuels and other energy sources, based on computer models of future economic development around the world. So you've got models based on models based on models based on models. Now, those models that try to predict future temperature, there are about 117 of those computer climate models. They're called CMIP-5. It's a coupled model intercomparison project. And these 117 models, on average, predict for the period that we already know about, the past, right? They predict about 2 to 3 times as much warming as actually observed by temperature measurements. That means that the models run hot, and it means that total warming is at most half, probably about a third of what these models are predicting. That, in turn, means that it's not dangerous. The amount that actually is happening is certainly not dangerous, and it's actually net beneficial to the world, and you can't get a catastrophic result out of that, and that means you can't justify the policies to try to reduce warming that would cost trillions of dollars.
And I take it that if you actually look at observed temperatures, while there has been undeniably a general warming of certain parts of the atmosphere, it kind of has stalled.
Yeah, that is the case. There's been about 0.8 to 1 degree Celsius total warming since about 1850. That's gone in fits and starts. It's gone up and down over that period. There was about the same amount of warming from 1910 to 1940 that there was from about 1977 to about 1998. Now, the period from 1910 to 1940, nobody claims that human activity had any significant contribution to that. CO2 had not risen enough to do anything much at that point. That means that it's really difficult to justify blaming the warming from 1977 to 1998 on human activity, since, after all, if nature could do the first part, why can't it do the second part? And we do know from long-term records that nature has managed to do that sort of thing many times in the past. Now, since 1997, from early 1997 until late 2015, there was no statistically significant global warming, according to the most reliable data that we have, which come from satellites and weather balloons. And then in 2016, we had, because of the strongest El Nino that we've recorded so far, we had significant warming in that year. 2017 is likely to continue to be warm, but then as a La Nina, the opposite of an El Nino, a southern oscillation in the Pacific Ocean, as La Nina takes effect, the cooling will come about and will come down. But even with the warming of 2016, there was still no statistically significant long-term trend in warming from 1997 to the present. And that means that the models, none of which predicted this absence of warming over this period, are invalidated, and therefore they provide no rational basis for any prediction of future temperature or for any kind of policy to deal with it.
This is part four of our series, Our Social Progressives Anti-Science. Today the subject is climate change. Our guest, Dr. Cal Beisner, he's founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation and author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. You'll find a link to the Cornwall Alliance and to Where Garden Meets Wilderness under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about what are some of the proposed and actually implemented policy changes and how they affect not only the poor here domestically, but globally. Stay tuned.
I bet you didn't know that the teaching of Latin in schools is making a comeback. Latin? Really? Isn't that a dead language? Well, take a look at what studies say about how well Latin students do on a test like the SAT. Memoria Press's Latin program will revolutionize your students' vocabulary, knowledge, and their understanding of grammar. And there is no better subject for teaching critical thinking skills. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR.
Male and female sex differences, contraception, transgenderism. These are some of the topics covered in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Ethics of Sex from Taboo to Delight. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Ethics of Sex contributors include Issues Etc. guests Ben Mays, Tom Eckstein, and Richard Stuckwish. Ethics of Sex, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Cal Beisner is our guest. Part four of our series, Our Social Progressives Anti-Science. Today the subject is climate change. So before we go on, you have been accused of being a denier of climate change and a denier of any kind of human culpability or contribution to climate change. How would you respond to that, Cal?
Well, those who make that charge are either sloppy and lazy or simply dishonest. Because as a matter of fact, in a variety of the different papers and articles that the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation has prepared, including things that I myself have written, we have affirmed that climate changes, we have affirmed that human emissions of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases almost certainly contribute to that change. We have affirmed that the global average temperature has risen by about a degree Celsius since 1850. We have affirmed that that climate change is a real thing. What we have contested is the notion that it is net dangerous, net negative in its impact on humanity, and that it would be wise for us to spend trillions of dollars trying to reduce climate change when that money could better be used to provide, for instance, pure drinking water, sewage sanitation, better nutrition, medical care, better housing, electricity, and so on, for the poor around the world who lack those things today. As a matter of fact, the best estimate of the cost of complying with the Paris Climate Treaty that was issued last year is that it would cost about $1 to $2 trillion per year from 2030 to the end of this century. The result would be that global average temperature in the year 2100 would be about 0.17 degrees Celsius lower than it otherwise would be. Now that's just crazy. That difference in temperature wouldn't have any effect on any human beings or on any ecosystems, but it would cost $70 to $140 trillion to achieve that difference. That money could be so much better used for so many other purposes. We just argued that's not a morally good idea to waste it that way.
That's one side of the impact on the poor, both domestically and globally. There's another side to it, which is if we are essentially saying to undeveloped countries, you can't have an industrial revolution, too bad.
Exactly.
What does that do?
Well, it traps billions of people in poverty for generations to come. Here's a simple fact for you. All of sub-Saharan Africa, except for South Africa, uses less electricity in a year than a single small town, I happen to forget the name of the town at the moment, but a single small town in Australia. There are hundreds of millions of people in sub-Saharan Africa who, because they don't have electricity, use wood and dried dung as their primary cooking and heating fuels. The smoke from that kills an estimated 2 to 4 million people a year around the world. These people desperately need abundant, affordable, reliable electricity, and that comes primarily from fossil fuels. Those are the best sources for that, and yet that's what the global warming alarmists want us to stop using. This is why at the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, we've presented a paper called A Call to Truth, Prudence, and Protection of the Poor 2014, The Case Against Harmful Climate Policies Gets Stronger. That's at cornwallalliance.org. And that's by one of the world's leading climatologists and one of the world's leading economists of climate and energy policy and environmental policy. This is something that your listeners really need to grasp because, frankly, the harm to be done to the world's poor and to the poor here in America is huge if we embrace policies driven by climate alarmism.
With about a minute, Cal, someone says, look, I'm at the water cooler. I say, look, this is what I believe about climate change, that yes, it's happening, but it's not the doomsday scenario. And yes, humans have contributed, but not to the degree that we are told where we need to make these major policies, both domestically and globally. And someone says, well, in response, you're just anti-science. How should we respond? About a minute.
Well, that's crazy. You know, the Bible gives us the fundamental worldview we need for science, and one of the most important things is what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 5:21, test all things, hold fast what is good. That is the key to science. And when we test the computer models that are the only basis for claims of dangerous man-made global warming, we find that those models fail miserably. Therefore, it is most scientific to question the models and to go with the empirical evidence that indicates that human emissions of CO2 and other greenhouse gases cause very little warming, but we show very, very clearly that the use of fossil fuels to provide abundant, affordable, reliable electricity and other forms of energy lifts people out of poverty, and poverty is a far greater risk than anything associated with climate, and therefore that economic growth and development that comes from the use of fossil fuels is far better than the poverty that comes from abandoning them.
Dr. Cal Beisner is founder and national spokesman for the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. He's author of several books, including Where Garden Meets Wilderness, Evangelical Entry into the Environmental Debate. Dr. Beisner, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too. God bless you.
In hour two of Issues, Etc., Pastor Tom Baker is going to join us, host of the radio program Law and Gospel, We're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson. Today we'll be in John chapter 4, Jesus calling disciples. Then, a little bit later in hour 2 of Issues, Etc., we're going to begin a new series. The series is Gnosticism in 21st Century America. Pastor Peter Burfind will be our guest, and we're going to just do a little primer on Gnosticism to kick off that series. That's in hour 2. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.